This is why we love racing in all its forms.
Max Delight shot through, grabbed the lead. Max Delight wins it.
The rail now for Zipping Rambo goes through in the Sandown Cup.
Very elegant. 10 group ones and now the greatest of them all, the Melbourne Cup.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
That's what we're doing, and it's a terrific race day today, and we mostly shift our focus to South Australia with the running of the famous Goodwood Handicap in Adelaide, or used to be called the Goodwood Handicap, now the Goodwood, and straight six meeting at Flemington, and other stuff going on as well, and I'm sure there's a heap going on in the other codes as well. As I say, g'day to Simone and Dan. How are you guys?
Good morning.
Good morning to both of you. Very well, thank you.
Simone's been hosting, Dan.
I have been.
She's been emceeing again.
Actually, both had a weekend of emceeing, didn't we? It seems like it's long ago. When we chat sometimes on a Monday, we go back over the course of the weekend and it's fresh in your minds. By the time we get to the following Saturday, it feels like it's a month ago. I was doing the Harness Breeders of Victoria Awards. We did it out at Kyabram via Trot's Vision, and you were at Shepparton, Simone.
I was. Shepparton, Saturday night, they had their annual Greyhound of the Year Awards, and I think this is the ninth year. It could be the tenth. I think it's the ninth year that they've been running these awards, and that I've been very fortunate to have been hosting them. And they just get bigger and better every year. And this year we had two special guests. We had Dipper, Robert Dippier Domenico, if I get his name right, who I'm not into football, but he was fantastic.
You don't have to be into football to know Robert Dippier Domenico.
No, that's right. But he was just a great person, fun, vibrant, could engage the crowd. And I don't pay a lot of time to, you know, sports people really, but he was great to work with. And we also had a local Shepparton girl. I had never heard of her. Her name is Jess Eva, and she's been on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here and The Block. And she grew up in Shepparton, and her father had greyhounds, and she used to work as a judge up in the tower there and so it was really lovely having a local back there, and she was great, full of energy. And we talk about people sometimes on our show who make us feel inadequate because of their CVs. Well, she's just so energetic. I felt like I needed to take some Barocca or something to keep up with her.
So you went up there with a pep in your step because you're emceeing, and then you found a person who overwhelmed you and you came home all depressed.
Me.
Did you come home from Kyabram all depressed, Dan, or...?
No, not at all. Actually, after that, it was a long day. I had to catch up with our good friend from racing.com, Clint Hutchinson, who's celebrating his 49th birthday.
He's always celebrating something.
Yeah, he's actually, that's a good point. He is. So it was a long day on Sunday, but and then a long trip to Hamilton, but rewarding, of course. Very loving harness racing community down there on Monday, and then it was time for a bit of R&R.
And you've been down the coast with Tanya. Hey, you know how you do a lot of time on the road? Are you a podcast man? Are you a music man, or do you listen to podcasts? What's your little companion of choice?
Yeah, a bit of both, because some of the places you drive to, you lose reception, within a certain, a bit over an hour away. So I'm a bit of both. The podcasting has come more into it, probably since I've been doing a bit more work at RSN, so I might be listening. I like listening to The Verdict on the Monday, so if I'm going somewhere, if I can't hear it in full, I'll be listening to it on the way home. Otherwise, I can't help myself, and I get a bit of my own music out. I listen to my Aerosmith,
Simone,
and Pearl Jam, a bit of Beethoven,
man.
Tchaikovsky, all that sort of stuff.
That Verdict, I like doing it, but every time I finish it, there's always an administrator who wants to dangle me out of a building by my ankles. So you do pay a price for The Verdict. Have you got a musical accompaniment of choice, Simone?
Oh, look, I do. It's usually The Cure that is on my CD. I use the old CD system in my car. So I am a bit of a tragic. So I listen to a lot of The Cure. Sometimes I listen to RSN. I put that on. I do actually like RSN in the mornings on school drop-off. I like listening to a bit of Racing Pulse, hearing some of the trainers on there. But I might flick between radio stations. I need to get a little bit more tech savvy and subscribe to some podcasts, I think. But having said subscribe to podcasts, our podcast is on Spotify for anyone who doesn't catch it first thing in the morning.
That's
you can Google Cracking
get,
the Codes
it,
on Spotify. It is very easy to get, which is great. I just wanted to mention also Thursday night at Sandown. What a fantastic night of racing. The RSN Sandown Cup, of course, and the two group ones, the Harrison Dawson and Sapphire Crown. So well done to the club. It's been a couple of years since we've been able to celebrate some racing that hard, and it was a fantastic, fantastic night. And from one end of the state to the other tomorrow, Dan, special day at Ararat. Not only the pacing for Pink, but the pony trots at Ararat tomorrow. So you're back down the highway.
You're calling them, Dan.
I'll be calling them. There is a race meeting there as well.
Are you going to call Darcy the Darcinator if she wins her race?
She's off a 460-metre handicap, so she might be pushing it.
Why is her little pale face Addie or some sort of champion? Why is she off a 460-metre handicap?
Well, she's been to a couple of training days, and he's a bigger pony, so he covers a bit more ground.
They start off on a certain mark and then readjust them. So they'll get two races, and virtually the first one, they start off on a mark, and if they feel it's not appropriate, they'll then adjust the rating. A bit like a horse going to Hong Kong, they almost always start off at class three, and they either go up or down.
Can we bet on it? Can we back Darcy? Can she actually help us for once in her
Please,
life?
Please, don't put the pressure on me or her.
No offense, Darcy. We're going to get you on next week to talk about it, by the way, Darcy, if you're bludging from school. And oh, no, Saturday morning, of course, you'll be just kicking back and listening to Mum on Cracking the Codes. Hey, guys, speaking of, you mentioned earlier, people who intimidate us. I've got a feeling Aaron Bain's going to be one of those, Dan. He's got his finger in every pie, hasn't he, this guest we got this morning?
Yeah, look, I thought it was a great opportunity to learn a bit more about Aaron. I had a good chat to him when I met him for the first time at Mildura, but it's a name I've been reading out as a winning owner on many occasions, and I didn't quite understand the connection. So when I got chatting to him, I was able to find out a bit more, and we will this morning. He's a trainer of thoroughbred horses. He's been having success there in South Australia and particularly with harness horses. So that will be a good chat. We'll find out a lot more.
All right, looking forward to that. And today, obviously, being the Goodwood, and one of the good winners of the Goodwood was a horse called Takeover Target, who was a champion of a decade or so ago. Everyone knows who he was. I don't have to reel it all off, but Japan, Singapore, everywhere in Australia, Royal Ascot repeatedly. His jockey was Jay Ford, who has got a terrific book at Rosehill today, and we're going to have a chat to Jay Ford about the experience of Takeover Target, and I know he's a horse that's fascinated you, Simone.
He has, Matt. It's just one of those wonderful stories, isn't it? And probably the modern day Farlap in some regards, the fact that he was bought very cheaply and went on to such amazing heights and won over $6 million. So I'm really looking forward to hearing a little bit more about the racing side of Takeover Target, not that beautiful story that we have heard so often out in the media, because it is what we would all love to do, go to the sales and pay not a lot for a horse or a greyhound and then go on to be a superstar like Takeover Target was.
And he's going to join us later on, Jay Ford. You're listening to Cracking the Codes.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
One man that's cracking at least two codes, we might even find out if he's cracked the third, is trainer Aaron Bain, who is a dual code trainer from Gawler in South Australia. But it doesn't end there with the thoroughbreds and the standardbreds. He's had a few winners in the thoroughbred world just in the last couple of months, and runner at Morpheville last week, and plenty of harness winners emanating out of his stables in South Australia, but also a lot of winners as an owner all across Australia, including ownership in some of Australia's best paces like Spirit of St. Louis. So, and a few others. They've got a really good filly from NZ called Covergirl, who's now with Luke McCarthy. So I thought it was time, guys, to have a chat to this man that I've been reading out his name in all sorts of places. And I had to have a chat to him when we were at Mildura and met for the first time, and thought, you'll fit in nicely to this show, Cracking the Codes. And he joins us this morning, Aaron Bain. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Dan. Thanks for having us on.
That's quite a big CV you've got there, Aaron. We don't like to get fancy guests on the show, but you've got a daunting CV across a couple of codes there.
Oh, I wouldn't say fancy. I say we work hard and we strive for success across both codes now. But there's a lot of work that goes into it. We've got a great team behind us as well. And we're supported by a number of people across the country as well. But, there's a number of horses that make up the brand, and we'll no doubt talk about them. But, there is a lot of work that goes into it.
And just to tick it off, have you owned greyhounds before? Are you thinking of training greyhounds?
No, I have had a couple of greyhound winners. So, there's been one or two there, but I sort of just follow them as interest. There's no interest to start training across three codes. Let's just try and be good at two.
Simone, if he did, this is a little test for you, Aaron. If you did take out a greyhound training license, can we think of any triple coders before? Has Australia ever had a triple coder? Would you like to be the first triple coder, Aaron?
John Westerlo. Remember John Westerlo a couple of years ago that we had?
The handsome guy.
Yeah. No, that's Paul Westervelle.
Oh, is that right?
That's
you remember
the stud
that quickly.
Master, okay. The stud master of Fernando Vale. Right. John Westervelle's a little bit older than Paul West. John Westerlo is a little bit older than Paul Westervelle, but he trained across three codes.
Mm. Come on, Aaron.
Yeah, there you go.
I've got a little fella, 1 year old, so I might buy him a pet dog and make it a grey animal. We'll just cross that over for you.
Speaking of the crossover, I mean, we've had Emma Stewart talking about it and one or two others, haven't we, Dan? And they've dabbled before, but is it a leap or is it a baby step? Is it a difficult transition to go from a training thoroughbreds to training harness horses?
I think for us it was, it's been very much, you know, we were talking about it for sort of 2 or 3 years prior to making the leap, you could say. We sort of looked at it in two ways that obviously we'd cut our teeth in harness racing and being born into the sport. We could just go about the thoroughbreds and get one or two and try and win a race in the bush and just work them in conjunction with the harness horses. Or we go about it pretty seriously and employ a team of staff and get the barn on site at the Gorambos Jockey Club, which we have. And from there, we've just been able to expand very quickly. Like, we only took out our trainer's license really in October last year. So we've sort of only been training for really 6 months. So we've been, you know, blessed and lucky to have some good success early. But, you know, we've been thankful to sort of build a team of people that, you know, sort of headline Ned Taylor, who come on our team from the thoroughbred side. He sort of cut his teeth with Kieran Maher and David Eustace. So to bring that experience over 7 years working with them, you sort of fast forward your stable a little bit and bring a wealth of knowledge to the team. So that's been a big asset to us.
Aaron, I had a good chat with you. We first met at Mildura and you were sponsoring races as well. So you don't find that many stables, but it's also great to see them putting a little bit back into the industry. You mentioned Kieran Maher. There's one thoroughbred stable that I know of that put a little bit something back, and I've seen them sponsor some races. And yourself decided to do it with one of the features through the Mildura Cup Carnival as well. I think you had your open day that same weekend, but of course encompassing the two codes and the extension, which we'll find out a little bit more about the owning, which is outside. It seems to be connected, but outside of the horses that you train as well. So you are very much on the front foot, and you've got horses with lots of owners that are in them, and a really good association with Summit Bloodstock.
Yeah, we've as you said, we have got a really good association with Summit Bloodstock, Jamie Dernberger Smith and Jake Webster, and obviously I used to train in partnership with Jake Webster. And then he sort of set up a business with Jamie, being Summit Bloodstock, and us, Aaron Bain Racing, and we had distinct models, but working very much closely together, and that's about bringing you know, people into this sport. We're very lucky to have a great group of owners. We use our My Stable communication system, where we've got sort of just under 1,500 people on our database, and 1,200 of those would probably own horses with us at the moment, you know. So we're very lucky to have sort of taken a great group of owners across from the harness to the thoroughbreds as well. But you mentioned there about Mildura, it's as much about sort of giving back to the clubs that, you know, we enjoy going to. And also we've got a great group of owners out of Mildura through ARCO, you know, and also the Kapiti Express, the Ladies Club and the Lads Club. But Mildura, it's just a, you know, Michelle McGinty Wilson, they do a fantastic job up there. I was sort of disappointed not to be able to go up there for the whole week, but we've sort of made plans to book a houseboat next year and be up there and use that as a week away, because it is a fantastic week in racing, and if we can sort of grow our relationship with the club, it can only benefit us as well while giving back to the industry.
Aaron, was it always a plan to get big, or was it something that's just evolved? Because the operation that you have at the moment, like, it's not just something that's obviously happened overnight, but do you look at things as you're going along and think, oh, well, we could improve there or we could expand there? Was that always a plan, or is it just the way it's evolved?
Yeah, Simone, I blame my grandpa for that when he bought me three chooks, when I started breeding chooks when I was a kid growing up. three turned into 300, and I had a little poultry farm as a hobby when I was going through school, and then I sort of got away with the chooks, and three horses are on the way to 300. So I sort of caught the bug a little bit from there, you could say. But I did start out training with Jake, and that was we did buy three horses to kick us off, and it sort of just evolved from there. We were our biggest owner and training together, and that brought a lot of challenges with it ourselves, you know, because you put a lot of financial pressure on when you're buying and training, and you know, if something goes wrong, it can all go wrong quickly. So we learned a lot of lessons from that. But then to sort of, as you've said, the operation it is today, you wouldn't be able to turn the tap on tomorrow and be the size have the amount of horses and owners we do, and we're thankful for the years that we've built up the ownership base and increased our quality of horses, and that's what we'll continue to do. But as much, you do learn lessons along the way, and there's things you were doing 3, 4, 5 years ago that you look back on and go, you're glad you experienced them to not only make yourself a better leader of the business, but also to grow the business into what you want it to be.
You own a lot of horses within the makeup, whether it be Summit or yourself personally. Just tell us about the ownership, because the horses that you are involved in that you're not training are based all across what I've seen of Eastern Australia, from Tassie, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, and obviously if the ones are in South Australia, they're generally trained by you. How many all up? Because when I was having a look earlier on in the week, I think as of about Thursday in the month of May, you'd had a winner per day, effectively, 18 from 18.
Yeah, we are. I think we're tracking 3 or 4 behind a winner a day for the year at the moment. So we're sort of on pace, certainly, to clear 300 winners for the year. The owning in other states sort of come about from, it all grew from here in SA with our training base. You know, we started sending, because we started to get many horses and get them on their mark, and we started sending them out to sort of Alex in Victoria, and then I had a really good relationship with Narissa in Queensland, and that's sort of how it grew. You know, we've got a lot of horses in Tasmania with Ben Yole, and it sort of grew from that. And what we're lucky to have sort of key relationships with leading trainers in each state. Probably one of our biggest growth areas in the last 6 months has been WA. We've got a dozen horses over there at the moment with Michael Young, a lot of them from New Zealand that we've purchased, and the majority of them, and that's sort of proving very fruitful for us. And Michael's a very good young trainer on the rise there as well. And we've sort of also just recently in the last sort of this year broken into the Tamworth area with sort of Darren and Brad Elder, and I think, you know, in 5 months we've had 18 winners there. So it's about placing your horses as much in the right areas for their, you know, their pattern of racing, their grade. It all comes into that, and then working with the best trainers. You know, you're only as good as your horse stock, and you're only as good as the people you work with, and you know, that helps us really grow our brand, and also working closely with Summit Bloodstock, getting more and more people involved in this industry. You know, we still like to travel with our horses from here, so say the Mildura's and the Meltons, which, you know, Arco we did recently, and we do go to Mildura a bit. But we're also a little limited with the, you know, with the pool of racing here in SA. So we're very mindful of that we need to expand our wings for the earning potential for our horses, our business and our owners, to continue to grow.
Interesting you mentioned that, that you travel, and I'm fascinated by the Yole situation in Tassie, because he's got a stranglehold on the whole industry down there, and each state, each jurisdiction is travelling different than the other, and Tassie and South Australia are two that have had very difficult times in recent years, and maybe there's more prosperity. You mentioned Tamworth area. Maybe there's a bit more prosperity down the eastern seaboard. With your horses scattered around every state almost, do you get a greater sense of clarity about the pecking order of which ones are travelling better than the rest?
Do you mean states?
The states.
Yeah, I think the Tassie SA one is a lot to do with the government and the point of consumption tax that gets back. You know, we probably don't get we certainly don't get as much back as what they do down there. I think off record, I believe our turnover figures, harness racing, are more than what Tassie are, but the point of consumption tax hurts us. So I haven't heard an election promise yet, and that'd sway my vote in the last 24 hours if it's a one did come out, but certainly not sure that's happening, you know. But, you know, hopefully we see some inroads there to really turn our industry around, because it is hard here. But, you know, I'll never go saying a bad word about our industry, because it's my lifeblood and where I've grown up. I love it, and we try and encourage and promote it as best we can.
Is it going up even or down? How's it shaping South Australian harness racing for the next few years?
Oh, I think we've been through some really tough periods. I think we've got every chance now to really go forward. We're under, you know, some new fresh leadership with Dean Elliott. I think he's going to be really good for our industry. He's recently been appointed to the, you know, he was acting CEO. He's now the CEO recently, and I think he's got some really good ideas. You know, he's young. He's got aspirations as well, and he's got a lot of energy. So, you know, we've got as big a chance as ever to really make some inroads. So I'm as, you know, vibrant as I can be.
Just looking at the trainers that you've briefly touched on that are training for you, and remember you're a trainer yourself, but Ben Yole, Talia McMullen, you mentioned Michael Young, which completes every state in Australia you've got horses in, Jack Butler, Narissa McMullen in Queensland, Darren Elder, Alex Ashwood, Emma Stewart, part of Emma's record hall of nine. I think you had about a third of those, didn't you, Aaron, on that night? And of course, Luke McCarthy as well, and he's probably got the horse that's at the top of the list for you guys.
Yeah, and you mentioned those people, and they are the best in their areas, you know, or right up there with the best. That's sort of what, you know, helps us really continue to grow this, working with the very best trainers and being able to get some of the very best horses, like you say, Spirit of St. Louis, and the opportunity to certainly, for us and Summit Bloodstock, to buy into him. Trevor Casey obviously owned him in New Zealand, and allude us the opportunity to join in the ownership in Australia, and that was one we jumped at. We bought some of our owners along that ride, and it's proving very fruitful at the moment. But not only that, it's an amazing thrill to sort of be on that ride, you know, with King of Swing retiring, and sort of the world looks his oyster for the next 2 or 3 years, and it's exciting to think what's ahead of him.
With Spirit of St. Louis, having a champion pacer, what's been the biggest thrill, the most thrilling moment, the most thrilling win with Spirit of St. Louis?
I think one of the most thrills I got was actually at Melton one night when he ran second, you know, and we went there and for Hunter Cup night, and you went there as a live hope, and you felt, my heart took about 10 minutes to go back in. It was skipping beats, you know, like you. And he only ran second. You know, you weren't on the track getting your photo taken. But I think as much, you know, the journey he's gone on from, you know, from the day he won a qualifier in Queensland to sort of just being a horse. And he had a few knockers early, but we sort of knew he had that high speed. And the job that Luke and Belinda have done with him has been outstanding. He's probably, you know, the rise he's taken over the last 6 months is a massive, or 9 months is a massive credit to them. And, you know, he's really developed into a sort of, just a complete package. He can do it at both ends. You saw when he won those races, sort of how tough he did it. So it's probably as much excitement that's to come. And you've got a genuine hope over the Winter Carnival. You've got a genuine 2022 into the Minion Horse, and then the opportunities that lie ahead. So I think we're yet to see the best of him.
Aaron, is it better being an owner or a trainer of your own horse? Like, what's the experience like going there, like you've just described with Luke McCarthy training the horse? Is there times as an owner that you and a trainer yourself that you think, oh, I wouldn't have done that, or you just trust them implicitly that, you know, it's just one of those experiences that you embrace because you know that they're in the best possible hands? I'm just curious to know that experience sitting on the outside of your own horse.
No, I would say, as much as you've got to entrust in those people, and we don't interfere. They are the best for a reason, and I can learn a lot off them as well, looking from an outside in and just talking to those people and adapting different training methods or just picking their brains and bringing ideas back to our stable. I've sort of been training for 10 years. These people have been training for 20, 30, 40 years and got, they've got plenty more winners on their resume than I have and CV. So you let them do what they're good at, and we just we bring ourselves and the owners along that ride.
Just on Spirit of St. Louis, forgive my ignorance if there's already a plan set, but what's next? Can he get better, and what's the target in the next 6 months for him?
I think he probably doesn't have to get a lot better. He's just got to continue what he brought to the table the last 6-9 months. And with, obviously with King of Swing retiring, he has that opportunity to sort of be Australasia's, you know, premier pacer. And provided he can sort of, you know, continue that vein of form that he was in, he'll go to the Queensland Winter Carnival. Then he'll sort of, he's got the Inter Dominion later in the year and Victoria Cup and Hunter Cup. So there's a lot of opportunities along the way, but that all resides in Australia. You know, there's been that, there was that temptation to go over for the slot race in New Zealand because we had a slot race, but Luke was very set on keeping him here in Australia because of the opportunities that lie ahead for him. And at that level, there is a lot of money on offer.
We speak to a lot of people. We're fortunate to speak to some people who have had horses that have taken them on journeys. And I think those of us who envy the experience of owning a champion, Dan's had some nice horses and Simone's had some really good greyhounds, but this, the idea of a horse taking you from city to city and then everything associated with it, like the, you know, going out to dinner and hanging out with the crew and then working up towards race day and maybe even something international, it's an amazing experience, isn't it, when you think about every layer of what the journey can be like with a champion horse?
Yeah, well, I think what Spirit of St. Louis has done for both our business, ADR, and Summit Bloodstock is, you know, put us out there a little bit more. And we, through that journey, like I remember one night races were called off here at Globe Derby, and we went to a pub. Louis was running that night, and I've never met this person, and he said to me, "Oh, you own Spirit of St. Louis? We're down here to watch it, you know." I just got talking to this guy from here. You know, but he's been obviously following our socials, and it's the brand as much that people follow with Spirit of St. Louis, and people following ABR now follow Spirit of St. Louis. So that's sort of where we're very blessed to sort of grow our own databases and ownership groups from a horse like him. So it sort of goes further beyond the racetrack and the financial results that he does produce.
Well, Dan does a lot of road trips, Aaron. Including New Zealand, and you know, very casually strikes up friendships with people like Robbie Williams in casinos and things like that. And don't you, Dan?
That did happen. I don't think many people believe me, but
you know,
have
Dan's so big in New Zealand. When witnesses, they saw him with Robbie Williams, Aaron, they're saying, "Who's that bloke with Dan Malecki?"
There's a little bit of mayonnaise on that, but it is a true story.
If I'm having my photo with Spirit of St. Louis, they're saying, "Doesn't Spirit of St. Louis look good?" Yeah.
So, Spirit of St. Louis left.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of New Zealand, there's a filly that you picked up just recently called Cover Girl, which is pretty exciting. Just tell us about Cover Girl and where she might be at.
Yeah, so she's on track for the Queensland Winter Carnival as well. Very exciting horse, obviously well-credentialed from New Zealand. Again, another opportunity that we were delighted to be alluded with Summit Bloodstock and to share that with our owners, and it was sort of a very, on our side, a very similar ownership group to Spirit of St. Louis. We didn't put her out to our general database because it would have been snapped up very quickly, and we didn't, it was sort of all taken already in a private deal. So very, very excited to have her join our team, and obviously with Belinda and Luke as well, they'll no doubt do a fantastic job with her over the coming years.
Well, I reckon Mildura, we talked about Mildura. I've already been asked to go back next year. I'm sure you'll be there. We just got to get Matt and Simone to come up next year, and I reckon we can do this show and a few others up there. What do you reckon, guys? Are we all in?
Aaron's in.
Yeah.
Aaron,
sounds like a good idea.
You're lucky, Aaron, because every guest we have, we then have a subsequent discussion about whether we'd love them to be part of our Love Bus tour. Where we go national, and
it's never happened. We've been talking about it for 2 years.
Well, Simone won't organise it. So there's a couple of feisty greyhound types down in Tassie that we love. There's a bloke who makes greyhound booties who lives in Richmond, and we like him for some reason. And I reckon you've made the cut. And our Juddy, our mate up north, Dan, he's part of our crew as well. And of course, Simone would like to see Paul Westacott there as well.
You're mixing Westerveld.
Westerveld. There's a very handsome greyhound breeder that Simone wants to have on our bus trip.
No, Matt's the one who'd like to have him on the bus trip, I think.
Oh, we all would.
I've known Paul for a long time, and I think Matt's become quite besotted in this whole story.
Which all means that if we ever get around to this bus trip, Aaron, it's going to be interesting. You never know what might go on there.
As long as Dan can pull on some strings and organise Robbie Williams.
For entertainment, yes.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the Gregory Peck, Jim Houlihan story, Dan, again. Have a listen to this one, Aaron. Jim Houlihan, any excuse to tell this story, the great legendary jumps trainer, you may recall the great Jim Houlihan, and he died about 15 years ago. And in the 1959, he was the leading punter at the showgrounds trots. He was a freak punter. Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner come out to make On the Beach. Gregory Peck's a harness guy, meets Jim Houlihan. They develop this great friendship. But the friendship was, Gregory Peck was more besotted with Jim Houlihan than Jim Houlihan was with Gregory Peck. Jim Houlihan never really quite understood what Gregory Peck actually did. And I said to Jim Houlihan at his farm one day, I said, oh, you know, how did you go with the famous actor, you know, after that showgrounds era when he was making On the Beach? And he said, oh, Gregory Peck became a pest because he kept trying to invite him to Hollywood. And Jim wasn't quite sure where Hollywood was. So describing the world's greatest actor at the time by a harness trainer from Rosebud as a complete pest, I still find endlessly fascinating.
Gregory
and I think that's what Robbie Williams might say about Dan, or vice versa.
Well, yeah. Who knows? He's probably having the same story with a group of his friends right now.
And Dan also knew Colin McCulloch, the author, as well, so he's got quite a list.
Yeah, that didn't quite end as well, unfortunately.
We'll tell you on the bus, Aaron. There's so many stories we need to fill you in about.
We'll enjoy it.
Yeah, we'll have a laugh a minute. There's no doubt about that. Aaron, congratulations with your success. I'm really taken aback by just the vast areas that you're getting to with two codes, and after this morning's interview, perhaps three codes. But such an exciting team of horses, and behind that is a very excitable group of owners. So congratulations on what you've achieved, and we look forward to watching a lot more success from Aaron Bain Racing.
Yeah, I want to. We've got some unfinished business there with Arco for you, Dan, just to get back to Melton and get her across the line. Obviously, your best bet of that night. So I feel we just let you down a little bit at big odds. So we better get back and make up for that at some stage.
I'll tell the team, I tipped this horse, Arco, that Aaron trains. It was 25-1, and I declared it my best bet of the night. Not my best each way, my best bet of the night. And it was one of the best things beaten you've ever seen. Aaron,
so your best bet
concur?
Got rolled, Dan, in other words.
Yeah, no. That's true.
Yeah.
Still run third at about $4 something to place.
Talk about getting something from a wreck.
That three won the trip, I think, just about, and went down a whisker. So, yeah. But she was
still hurts
that night. But we'll get her back there. She's returning to work on Monday next week. So she's had a really good spell, and we'll... and the ABR Lady Club has been sort of one of four clubs that we've put together with the Lads Club, really, to sort of kickstart ownership for people that never thought they'd be able to get involved. So, yeah, we do have a lot of ownership opportunities, whether it be through that or 1%, 10%, whatever. We accommodate for everyone, and that's where we've been lucky enough to sort of really get people involved in this great sport and the one we've grown up and loved. So.
And, of course, you've got your website, Aaron Bain Racing, if you want to have a look at. There are horses to get into there of both codes as well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks, Dan. And thanks for having us on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, ours too. Great chat, Aaron. Continued success. We'll talk again soon.
Look forward to seeing you, Mildura, and on the bus.
Yes, right. Thanks, Aaron. Yes. You're driving the bus, by the way.
No, Robbie Williams is. All right.
He's the bus butler. He just gives us our sandwiches, walks up and down. Hey, good on you, mate. It's been a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you at Melton with that horse that Dan tipped that night.
We'll be back there. See you, guys.
This is RSN, cracking the codes.
Take over Target. He's under pressure at the moment. Then Augusta Proud. I Am Invincible 2 in front. Take over Target after him now from Augusta Proud. Flying Phoenix. I Am Invincible in front. Take over Target. Went up on the outside. 8 Group 1 wins. $6 million. A true champion. Take over Target. Takes the Goodwood by 3/4.
And listen to the cheers. And I think the cheers at Morpheville that day were only outdone a few years later when Black Caviar went over to Morfettville as well. So what a day that was. As Jay Ford, who was the pilot, I think, in nearly every single start that Takeover had, Takeover Target had in that amazing globetrotting career, joins us on Cracking the Codes. Jay, good morning.
Morning, guys.
One thing I thought listening to that replay was, if you could grab a head collar and take one of those two home, you may have actually put it on I'm Invincible, given his subsequent performance at stud.
Yeah, he turned out to be quite the sire, didn't he? But, fond memories. He was a marvellous horse, and it's good to always look back and reflect on his career.
When he was taken somewhere new, and I remember... the Black Caviar situation at Goodwood, at Morfettville for the Goodwood and the Robert Sangster, Adelaide was just in raptures and they crammed the joint that had never been so full. What was it like when Takeover Target, I know he went to Perth, obviously international, Singapore, Japan and Royal Ascot, but what was the reception when he went somewhere new, like Adelaide?
Very good. He, obviously, as his career went on, he became a very popular horse. So wherever he went, he always had plenty of supporters, and same thing happened when he went to Adelaide for the Goodwood. They turned out they had a bumper crowd, and he was just one of them horses that everyone sort of got behind and really supported, and it just grew as his career went on.
Well, with the Goodwood, significant in a way, it was almost his farewell. Did you know at the time... it was closer to the end because he went back overseas, Singapore, and then a run in England. But so the Morfettville, the Goodwood, was actually his last run in Australia. And it came one run after. I think the only time he didn't ride him was when he won that TJ Smith Nash rode him. So was there any sort of bittersweetness about the Goodwood, you're probably not to know, but the Goodwood win and maybe being more precious now than it was on the day?
Like you just said, we weren't to know that he would only have two more starts after the Goodwood win. Obviously, he was getting older, but he was still racing quite well. But I think when he won the Goodwood, he was, I think, 9. So obviously, he was getting to the back end of his career. But, obviously, we weren't to know that he would only have two more starts before he was retired. So obviously, that was his last win, his last Group 1 win, and it was good to, like you said, obviously I didn't ride him in the TJ, so it was good to get back on his back and win for one last time.
Jay, it's a remarkable story, Takeover Target, purchased for $1,250 and went on to earn $6 million. It's one of those stories that everyone dreams about, a bargain basement buy and hitting the heights that Takeover Target had. But he took a while to actually win his first race, didn't he? And he was plagued by injuries, leg injuries, and just throughout his career, it makes it all the more special. Was it having you on his back for nearly all of his starts that helped him across the line every time?
Oh, I don't, I'd like to think so, but I don't know about that. He obviously, early in his career, he was originally trained at Randwick by John Morrish, and he had numerous issue after issue, and they ended up wanting to move him on, and that's where Joe picked him up at the sales. And obviously, from that day forward, Joe gave him that TLC and care that he and nurtured him and what he needed, and he just really flourished under Joe. And you know, he didn't have his first start till he was 4 years old. So, obviously, he needed that time early to get over all his niggling problems. And as his career went on, he just, became the horse he was.
They don't always look the part, champions, do they? I remember Placid Arc looked like a sausage dog, and he had this weird galloping action. And I remember looking at Takeover Target at Flemington one day before one of his big wins up the straight, and he always... He didn't look impressive physically, did he? He wasn't a big horse. He always looked to be carrying condition. What was your impression of him as a specimen, and what was he like to ride? Did he just? I remember asking Ben Malham after he won on Black Caviar once up the straight at Flemington. I said, "What was she like to ride? Was it like sitting on a rocket?" And he said, "Not really, because you don't realise how fast you're going. You don't necessarily feel it." What did he feel like underneath you?
Well, he felt like a rocket. Obviously, he wasn't the smoothest going horse when you're sort of just trotting and cantering, but when he was in full flight and galloping, that was the best, when he felt at his best. But like you said, he always looked burly. He always had a hairy coat on him. You know, it gets quite cold in Queanbeyan. So, but like you said, he always raced with condition. He was just a little nuggety bulldog sort of a horse that I think his greatest attribute was his will to win. You know, he just had that, he had a massive heart. He knew where the line was. He was a winner, and he didn't always win by the biggest of margins, but it took a good horse to get past him because he didn't like horses getting past him.
He seemed to float along at an amazing competitive speed. He's very deceptive to the eye. So Royal Ascot, like, I still have visions of Paul Perry and Shannon Perry with Schwarzer in Top Hat and Tails, and Lee Friedman with Miss Andretti. Australians just don't look the part in Top Hat and Tails. We always look, Lee Friedman looked like kind of a penguin or something. So that all the pomp and ceremony, Jay, and I know there were return visits, and I know there were other international assignments as well, but to arrive for the pomp and ceremony at Royal Ascot, and the first time he went there, he wasn't the megastar takeover target. He had a much bigger profile every time he went back. What was it like the first time for you and the horse and for everyone? And then did it get bigger and bigger because his profile got bigger and bigger?
I think so. Obviously, the first time we ventured over there or overseas, was all a bit of an unknown for everyone involved. So it was quite an experience. And obviously, he went back for the following 3 or 4 years. And every time he went back, it grew and it grew and it grew, you know, because he just...
Did the Poms love him? Did the Poms take to him?
Yeah, they actually did, I think, because I think, you know, knockabout bloke like Joe and this horse, and he sort of conquered everywhere he went. You know, like I said, he had a real good following, and he went back year after year to Ascot, and, no, they all seemed to welcome us with open arms, and, you know, it was... quite good times going over there.
And Jay, also, he won Group 1s in Singapore and Japan. Tell us about those performances.
Yeah, well, they're all amazing. You know, you got a horse who year after year kept travelling the world and racing at the top level and winning, you know. Like, Singapore was great. I think Japan, for mine, is probably... his greatest win. You know, I think it was quite a dominant performance, and it was a very good field of Group 1 sprinters. I think there was something like 10 Group 1 winners in that race, and he beat Silent Witness and the like. So for mine, Japan was a great experience, but I probably feel that was probably one of his best victories.
Do people underestimate the greatness of him as a sprinter? Like, the story sort of shrouds the absolute greatness. You mentioned there that he beat Silent Witness. He was a superstar dominant sprinter, but people talk about Black Caviar, and then they talk, well, was Haylist the next best? And then they talk about Nature Strip. Was Takeover Target every bit in the realm of a Nature Strip?
I think so. Like, you know, I don't think it's very fair to compare, you know, superstar horses from one era to another, but look, he'd hold his own against any of them lot. You know, he had one thing that they don't, and he did it year after year and travelled the world and took on all comers. So, like I said, that was just come down to him. He just gave 110% every time he went out. You know, and if he wasn't winning, he wasn't far off. I think he only finished further back than fourth or fifth once or twice in his career. So he had that longevity and that consistency.
Jay, you were riding him when you were quite young. What does a horse like Takeover Target do for your career early on?
Oh, it's done a lot because he come along at the back end of my apprenticeship, and obviously he springboarded me into becoming a senior jockey. So that put me up in lights. From pretty early stage, obviously, riding in Sydney and that. I had a good apprenticeship and did well, but then he carried me on into as a senior jockey. And it's probably something that at the time I didn't realise or appreciate, but as you get older and you realise having an association with a horse like him, you sort of look back now and you look fondly and you sort of realise how special that was to be able to ride a horse of that calibre throughout his whole career.
Jay, often we get caught up and forget, you know, once you're associated with a great horse like that, not we're forgetting about him, but who would be the next best horse that you have ridden, presuming you haven't ridden one better than Takeover Target?
Yeah, no. Takeovers stands above a lot of them. I've been fortunate. I've ridden a lot of really good horses over the years. Probably the next one that I would say is probably a horse called Hotel Grand. I rode him.
Mm-hmm. Anthony Cummings?
Anthony Cummings. I won a spring champion and a Randwick Kinney's on him and rode him as he ran in a Cox Plate as a 3-year-old. He unfortunately broke down. He probably was the next best because he only won 2 Group 1s, but if he'd stayed sound and raced on, he's the sort of horse that probably could have won half a dozen Group 1s.
No, absolutely. You're flying again at the moment. You've got a terrific book of rides at Rosehill today. Just as the story has moved on, Joe Janiak, of course, was famous as the taxi driver who lived in a caravan and got this famous horse, and his son Ben appeared on the scene as well as we looked at Royal Ascot as it unfolded. And I know Joe's not of the greatest health these days, so we wish him all the best. And Dan and I are going to have a chat to Ben Janiak a little bit later this morning between 10 and 12 to talk about his perspective on Takeover Target as well, but also what he's up to now. And he's up on the Gold Coast. He's got him and his missus have got some units. And my mail is he's about to rekindle, or he has just rekindled his trainer's licence.
Yeah, he's just dabbled back into the training. He sort of left the industry there for a few years and he moved up to the Gold Coast a few years back with his now wife. And, he's just starting to took out his licence again and dabbling around with a few horses. So it's good to see him back in the swing of things and, hopefully he can do well.
He's a bit of a character too, Ben, so looking forward to having a chat to him. Hey, Jay, good on you, mate. I mean, I know that it can be a bit bittersweet when a great horse comes and goes and you've got an association with it, because once the dust settles, you've got to get on with things. And obviously that was always going to be a peak, but to be able to rally and you're going, take out Takeover Target, you're probably going better now than you've ever gone in your whole career.
It's a tough industry. You ride the highs and the lows and you have good runs and bad runs. And, yeah, at the moment, I'm having quite a good run and getting plenty of opportunities and riding plenty of winners. So that's the aim of the game. And it's a long-term game, so you just keep turning up and doing your best.
Well, and it's as we say goodbye, it's a time of year where if ever you're going to reflect, it's now, because we've got one of the races that Takeover One being run today at Morpheville in South Australia, and very, very soon Royal Ascot comes around again, and what amazing memories. So you probably will have a bit of a think about that once or twice. Mate, thanks for joining us on Cracking the Codes. We've really enjoyed your company, and good luck at Rosehill today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, guys, two fantastic guests again this morning. And Matt, it was a really good question that you asked Jay about, does he think that Takeover Target, the story of the horse being purchased for a cheap price by a taxi driver, overshadowed his career on the track? And in my case, it's a yes, because I didn't know that he'd won 8 Group 1 races. I knew he was successful, but I did know that story of him being sort of a rags to riches type of story. So it was really lovely hearing from his jockey, Jay Ford, this morning. So a good get there. Well done.
Sometimes it is the case, Dan, isn't it, where the story adds to the horse. I think Farlap in the Great Depression added a bit of magnitude to the Farlap story, and Paleface Adios, if he was Plainface Adios, he might not have been quite as famous.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, yes, Simone, thank you. It has been a lovely reflecting with Jay Ford and Aaron Bain. One of those people you're envious of because they're high achievers. And, you know, low achievers like us, we really get a bit intimidated by high achievers.
It makes you feel a bit inadequate at times, doesn't it? But anyway, look, we've got plenty
to
look forward to.
Well, Dan is mates with Robbie Williams, so he's
oh, that's
there.
Right. Yeah, not true. But look, it's been another great show, and looking forward tomorrow to the pony trots like we talked about earlier today at Ararat. So it's going to be very special, Dan calling Darcy in a first pony trot race. And for anyone that may be tuning into Trots Vision, little Bobby looks a bit like a mini pale-faced Adios, so you won't miss him, a little chestnut pony there, and she'll be in the teal-coloured silk. So looking forward to it. But again, guys, a great show. Thank you, and see you next week.